the Late Night Sound on Planet Waves FM Pacifica. Passengers, collaboration of, from what I have read, Eno and U2 minus Larry Mullen Jr.'s drumming. The sound of the drummer is one of the things that is the most distinguishing sounds of any really successful music that comes across, especially rock music. And so they didn't want that characteristic, very precise drumming of U2. Then I read that Mullen was still involved. Like, I see his picture in one of the places where the work was done and so forth. Eno, by the way, the great transformer of a record producer, distinct in all the world as such. This is just what he does. He has this quality of being able to bring out that which is there and to be this point of no return for many artists. And I resurrected my program before and after Eno from about 5 years ago. That's on the front page of planetwaves.fm. And so I do a whole program where I give examples of what important acts that Eno worked with. David Bowie, I give three examples of artists I know well. David Bowie, Talking Heads, and U2. U2's first project with Eno was The Unforgettable Fire. The Unforgettable Fire is an unforgettable experience the first time that you hear it. And U2 was fantastic before this, but it is a whole new thing working with Brian and Danny Lanois, I believe, as the engineer. And they just get this whole, I don't know, it's worth checking out. Now, Passengers, I can't say enough good things about it. And it's another one of these things I just always take with me. Maybe my favorite iteration of U2, but Unforgettable Fire and Joshua Tree, man, they're pretty good too. And so there you have it. We'll have a couple of more selections from Passengers coming up. So my adventure into, oh my God, this virus, no virus thing has become so ridiculous this week, began with clicking on a Dell Bigtree The Highwire clip where he's sitting with some person, maybe people who know this, I don't really care who it is, some expert on this pandemic, and he says, are we out of this finally? Are we finally home free? And the guy says, well, no, we're really not. And I'm thinking, well, we're not out of it at what cycle threshold? I saw the episode of The Highwire where Bigtree explains that even if you believe in a virus, let's temporarily put on the virus paradigm propeller hat right now, that tinfoil hat, that conspiracy theory known as SARS-CoV-2, Bigtree demonstrates by the data that the efficacy of the PCR falls off at about 17 cycle thresholds. And, you know, the thing with journalists is that what they know is self-documenting. You always have to assume a journalist knows what they wrote about last week, last month, last year, 10 years ago. It's in the record of their work and in their mind, unless you think that a journalist in 2022 can completely contradict what they said in 2020, but Bigtree's not really a journalist. He's a minister who made a TV show for himself funded by some people who were anti-vaccine, bought him a ranch in Texas, et cetera, et cetera. But he plays a journalist on the internet, and with full knowledge that the PCR, even if you think there's a virus, a deadly virus, is absolutely useless above cycle 17, and they're pushing it out to cycle 45, well, the question would go right to, you know, are we done with this yet, Mr. Expert on my show? The question, he says, no. And then the journalist doing his job should say, at what cycle threshold? Because if you, assuming a virus and assuming, pretending that the virus can be identified by the PCR, assuming that that identification proves infection, none of this is true, but it's supposed by some to be true, that if you go through this series of steps, you can measure viral load with the PCR. It's complete horseshit, but you can't. You can't. But they say that you can. But let's pretend that you can. Let's pretend there's a virus and that the PCRs met the gold standard. And that means they know they have exactly the right molecule, and they're finding it and they're measuring it accurately and all those things that they're supposed to do. Well, their whole thing falls apart at cycle threshold 17. At cycle threshold 35, a positive means you found one molecule, according to the great Stephen Buston. And so the question of are we out of the woods, look at these positives, gets punted right to, at what cycle threshold are we talking about? 17, where you might actually reasonably say you have found the molecule of the bacteria that contaminates Concord grapes sometimes. That's what you're supposed to do with the PCR. You're supposed to use it as an analytical device. It's not a diagnostic device. It can certainly measure the purity of something at a low cycle threshold, because the higher the cycle threshold, the more false positives you get, even assuming your test kit is a good test kit. You can't fly to the moon in a Ford Pinto. Probably should. I haven't seen a Ford Pinto on the road in a long time. They were the ones that blew up when the turn signal was activated and they were rear-ended. So then Children's Health Defense floats into my inbox. And I, like many people, concede that Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s organization is doing great things. They're all about calling out the dangers of vaccines. They're all about saying there's, and they know this. This is known. RFK got this information from the documentation and learned the story of how Reagan, and I haven't posted this audio that, the speech that RFK Jr. made right before I asked him the question 2 weeks ago, what was it, three, how he learned how little the federal government knows or cares about the dangers, and how Reagan signed off on allowing total indemnity for the manufacturers of so-called vaccines because they can't make them safe. And it is known that they do not actually do safety testing. There are no blind longitudinal studies. There are really no real meaningful trials. So the whole thing is kind of thrown to the public for the beta test. And then we catch the results in the Vaccine Adverse Events Response System, VAERS, which is tracking approximately 28,000 deaths reported to the CDC following the COVID injections. Multiply that by 100. For the government's official estimate of how many cases of vaccine injury they capture, they've already got a million or so reports of injuries, more than 150,000 hospitalizations. We know the government and companies lie. I think this is accurate information coming into the Vaccine Adverse Event Response System. The lie is that, well, it's good for you, it protects you, it saves you, so it kills all these people. But, so, I endured that for a couple of minutes. Big Tree saying, well, are we out of the woods yet? And the guy says, no, we're not out of the woods. Well, just think, cycle threshold. Or, more to the point, think primers. So then CHD floats into my inbox, and Reiner Fuhlmich is in there. Now, Reiner Fuhlmich is supposed to be a good guy, right? He's the guy who sued Deutsche Bank for some massive fraud. He brought the suit against Volkswagen. He's admitted in Germany and California. This guy's got a useful law career. And early on in COVID, he started speaking out against various shades of COVID fraud. And then did this, he did these interviews every week for a year and a half, probably still going on, the Corona Investigative Committee, and that was all going swimmingly until they had Steve Lanka and Andy Kaufman on the program explaining the problem with the virus theory. Now, you can't just say, I don't like that you're saying there's a problem with the virus theory, therefore there's a virus and it kills people. Whatever that is, it's not science. Okay. So, basically, Lanka and Kaufman, you may know these people. Lanka's the guy who brought the lawsuit in. Well, he offered some reward in Germany, some large sum of money, if someone could provide a paper showing that the measles virus causes the measles. And it can't be done. Can't be done. You could say, well, it must do it. Or you can say, maybe there's a little problem with this theory. Maybe we need to reconsider what causes the measles, what this thing called the measles is, what this thing called a measles vaccine is, if we have never isolated the virus and can actually show beyond any doubt that that's the thing that causes this physiological response. So Filmic melts down, pretty much. And his guy, Wolfgang Wardog, Wardog, I call him Wolfgang Wardog, one of the first presenters I ever heard talk about the problems with the early experiments of isolation and purification. He was the first presenter I heard. He was doing these very simplistic videos, like on a laptop at his dining room table, like we all started. And then, 2 years later, he's got Lanka and Kaufman on the program, on this investigative committee and panel, and he's on the panel. He's Reiner Filmic's war dog, and he's saying, well, no, you can't be right. But that's not a scientific argument. I refuse to believe. Like, you can't be right. So I click on this, and we who have tracked this, this was like the fight of the century. Many of us watched it live. I don't watch this crap live. But this time, I tuned in for Andy Kaufman and Steve Lanka appearing on the Corona Investigative Committee, hosted by Reiner Filmic, thinking, what's going to happen? Because Filmic is just not able to bring himself to admit that there's a problem with the virus theory. He just doesn't like the idea. A lot of people don't like the idea. Well, I don't care if you don't like it. What do Skatey 8 papers say, and what do nearly 200 governments say? We don't got any. Now, the human mind is fantastic at rationalizing. You can be like my father and say, if that were true, that would be the biggest story in the news. Yeah, if they were news. All right, so, to my point, I promise I'll get there eventually. I click on this thing on Children's Health Defense TV, which comes with the announcement, guaranteed free of censorship. And if we recall, the question that I asked RFK Jr. 2 or 3 weeks ago is, what about Christine Massey's 182 governments saying they don't have a sample? And I didn't say this, P.S., why the hell isn't she on Children's Health Defense TV? So who does RFK Jr. put up next? Reiner Filmic. And he's now, I'm going to treat you to this. Or maybe it's just going to be pure agony. I'm going to play the whole 7 minutes. It's a long time. You could take a whole walk. Instead, you could play with your dog. Make dinner for your kitty cats. All 7 minutes. Listen to how he attempts to explain why the PCR is not valid. Now remember, he's supposed to be on the side of the truth. The PCR is not valid. It is not a valid diagnostic tool. It It is, there's a million things wrong with it. And he's going to try to explain it. Here you go.
The PCR test is a great tool. It was invented by a brilliant mind by the name of Kary Mullis. He won a Nobel Prize for this in 1992, I believe. It cannot be used for diagnostic purposes in the sense of finding out whether or not somebody is infected or even ill. Why is that? Well, there's basically two reasons. Reason number one, the test cannot distinguish between dead and live matter. So if you test positive, it means that it has found a fragment of the coronavirus, because that's what it's looking for. It only looks for the coronavirus. It doesn't look for any other viruses. So it has found a fragment of the coronavirus. But this may very well be the remnants of your body's immune system's fight against the common cold or the flu, because coronaviruses, there are four of them, are endemic. That means they exist, they've been in existence and cohabitating with humans for decades. So if it finds that coronavirus, it could very well be that it's just the remnant of your body's immune system's fight against the flu or the common cold, which may have happened 4 or 5 months ago. For an infection, you need to have a whole virus, and that's reason number two why it can't work. You need to have a whole virus enter the cells and starting to replicate there. That's when you're infected, because that's when you have symptoms too. So you need a whole virus. This test never finds a whole virus, because whatever is on the swabs that's taken from the nose or the throat is crushed so that there's no whole virus left anymore. And then you put it into a machine, and then this machine is set so that you will know and see what is really in there. This is done, this is a kind of magnifying, I guess you could call it. It's called cycles of amplification, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, etc., etc. But everyone agrees now that anything beyond 24 cycles of amplification is totally unscientific, because you all of a sudden everything becomes visible, everything and anything. And Mike Eden told us that at 35 cycles of amplification, you end up with at least 90% false positives. Now, the first tests that were designed in the context of corona by this now infamous professor, Dr. Drosten from Germany, were set at 45 cycles of amplification. This was recommended to the entire world by the World Health Organization as the gold standard for the detection of viruses, in this case, the coronavirus. Even the Frankfurt Public Health Agency says we do not consider anything beyond 24 cycles of amplification. If you also take into consideration that at 35 cycles of amplification, you end up with at least 90% false positives, what do you expect at 40 to 45 cycles of amplification? So those are the two reasons why, no matter how you apply the test, it cannot tell us anything about infections. It cannot distinguish between dead and live matter, and it cannot find a whole virus. However, as I just said, this test was applied in a very unscientific manner. It had so many, what they call the Corman-Drosten protocol, which is a kind of an article they wrote on how to test people with the PCR test. It has so many defects, so to speak. It's a highly defective paper. But the worst of it is that they recommended cycles of amplification of 45. That is guaranteed to produce false positives. They needed cases in January of 2020, but there weren't any. There were no cases. They applied a lot of pressure on the World Health Organization, asking their emergency committee to meet. They met in mid-January, but couldn't agree on the declaration of a public health emergency of international concern. The term pandemic is for the general public, but internally, what they really wanted is this public health emergency of international concern. But in order to declare this, you have to have cases. Why did they want it, by the way? They didn't need it for lockdowns or mask mandates or social distancing, but they needed it for new drugs, new totally untested drugs to be used on humans. Unless you have a health emergency, that's what this is, a public health emergency of international concern, you cannot use untested new drugs. Because you're not going to get a what they now call in the U.S. an emergency use authorization, or in Europe it's a conditional use authorization. So they needed this public health emergency of international concern, but they didn't have any cases. But then, because they didn't have any cases, then they agreed, oh well, but it's still dangerous out there in Wuhan. We don't know what's going on. We're going to have to meet again 2 weeks from now. 2 weeks later, they met again. Then they declare it the public health emergency of international concern. What had changed? Nothing. Except that this Drosten guy, Professor Dr. Drosten of Charité University in Berlin, that he had provided them with his test. And with the help of this test, set at 45 cycles of amplification, they created cases. They had thousands and thousands of cases. That's how they created the public health emergency of international concern, and that is the only foundation for any and all of the measures, including and above all the so-called vaccinations.
Mm-hmm. Let's start at the end. If the only way they had cases was using this absurd Corman-Drosten test, then when are there real cases? At what point does the thing become real? He admits they've declared an emergency with no basis. Okay, when then does the emergency become real? And if the test doesn't really work and they're running it at cycle 45, then how do they know they have even a single real case, assuming that there's a virus and assuming that there's infection even possible? Let's just pretend. Let's just for a minute stay in the virus paradigm. I know it's painful. Where does anything real come from? Let's go to the beginning. He starts by saying, Carrie Mullis, brilliant mind, yes, very high on LSD, driving around the mountains of California, and he has the idea, and the idea became the polymerase chain reaction. There's a book chapter on Planet Waves. If you go to the search engine on planetwaves.net, type in Carrie Mullis, his book chapter of how he invented this will come up. Fjulmich admits this is not for diagnostic purposes. It cannot tell if you're infected or if you are ill. Assuming a virus, that is true. Then he says it will pick up old virus, assuming virus. Yes, that's true. That's the cover story. That's what you read in the New York Times in August 9th of 2020. And that's what the writer responded to me when I wrote to her. Apurva Mindervini wrote back and said, well, there is a pandemic and it's very serious, but we're not catching the cases soon enough and the PCR is catching all the old cases. She says this to me. That's never in her story. Again, you know what a journalist knows because they wrote it. It's not in the story. She was lying to me. Or just parroting what her editors told her to say. I don't really know. I figure when people utter a falsehood contrary to the known facts that they have reported, they're full of it. Okay, so old virus, live virus, dead virus. Viruses, in the myth of viruses, by the way, are this weird thing that we're told is not really alive and it's not really dead. Well, what is it? It's a genetic code, but then it looks like a ball with spikes and a face and it drinking a beer. Okay, then he says that the PCR can find it finding only coronavirus, only. So he's falling for the myth of the PCR that it will find any molecule. If it's looking for the right molecule, if it is primed correctly, and if you're using it at a low cycle threshold. Otherwise, as he says, When you jack the cycle threshold, you're amplifying everything. How then is it finding only coronavirus? And then he says, and by the way, it can't find whole virus. Well, if you need whole virus to convey the virus, and if you need whole virus to get infected, show me the fucking virus. You can't say you can't find it and it's not there. Everybody was walking around wearing masks to prevent the spread of the whole virus. Well, they should just be able to sample. They certainly have enough masks. Sample them and find some whole virus. But no whole virus has ever been found. And here's where he totally falls apart. He doesn't say that they can't find whole virus because they haven't found whole virus, because their tests say, their experiments claiming to have whole virus, all they're doing is making a metagenomic computer program, synthetic nucleotide technology in silico virus, mimic clinical specimen. This is quoting all their documents. And P.S., this is my favorite. There are four endemic coronaviruses that have been around for decades? No. They've been around, if they exist, they've been around since the fucking Ice Age or the last 10 Ice Ages or what? They were talked about starting in the 70s, but when you discover a fossil, it's, you can't say, wow, that turtle must have just walked by last week. It's a fossil. So you can't say that the coronavirus has been around since the 70s. They were allegedly discovered. Okay, now, whole virus, he says, can't find that. And he says it several times, you can never find whole virus. And he says, the PCR is best when you're infected, and therefore you're contagious. Okay. Well, why do you need a test? If you bump your head, you don't get a test to find out you bumped your head. Maybe you get a test to find out if you've got a conjunction, which it is. If you hit your head against a soccer ball, that is definitely a conjunction. A concussion, you know what happened. So if a person's sick, they're sick. So you take care of them and then they get well, hopefully. And I'm sure that, well, almost everybody... Everyone who wasn't already way at the brink of being so sick they were going to keel over was killed by the so-called cure. All right, now then he gets into cycles of amplification. And he says right out, everyone now agrees that beyond 24 cycles is unscientific, that at cycle 35, 90% of your positives are false positives. And it's amplifying anything and everything, which means it's not amplifying coronavirus. Because it's everything and everything is not SARS-CoV-2, that specific coronavirus, the magical, all-powerful polymerase chain reaction that can find any molecule, only that molecule suddenly is finding anything and everything. Now, and I'm not done tearing this apart. The reason I am being so hard on him is he is a fraud attorney, and I have known many of these people. And the fraud attorneys, when you get to talk to them finally, are the ones who can cut the issue apart in one swoop. They have it reduced to the essential argument. And he is all over the place. He is either lying or he doesn't understand the issue. Now, he's on RFK Jr., on Children's Health Defense TV, this topic is verboten, the topic of whether there's a virus or not. As we will in a second hear RFK Jr. do a similar dance with two left feet, shoelaces tied together, when I ask him, what about those 182 Freedom of Information Law requests to governments and institutions, asking them if they have any of this mystical, magical, all-powerful, whole live virus, and they all say they don't. Okay, huge whopper. He says the Corman-Drosten protocol, which indeed has been absolutely dismantled. There is nothing left of the Corman-Drosten protocol. The Corman-Drosten protocol was a paper pushed through a publication called Eurosurveillance around the 22nd, 23rd of January 2020, which creates a PCR alleged test protocol for the alleged virus. But Kristen Drosten admits they did this without any samples. They had no samples. They did, and the thing about the PCR is it can find a needle in a haystack if you tell it exactly precisely what a needle is. But no, Corman Drosten cook up a test with nothing. Maybe a little email Chinese sequence MN908947. They cite that. That's a partial synthetic metatranscription of the non-existent N gene of SARS-CoV-2, which was since dropped from the protocol in Europe. They make this up out of nothing. Nothing. It's a bunch of computer files, and the World Health Organization is not pushed by them. So far as I understand it, when a country would contact the WHO and say, we need a test for this, we've got our one lonely PCR machine in the capital, wherever it might be, in Brazil or something, they sent them to Kristen Drosten, who sent them the protocol. He was their boy. The WHO is Gates, who we're going to hear from in a second. Now, huge, huge error. He says the Corman-Drosten protocol calls for cycle threshold 45. The single biggest critique leveled against the Corman-Drosten assay, the alleged assay, claimed it was one, is that they never specify a cycle threshold. They don't say how long to leave the machine on. Okay. Well, how long do you leave it on? How many cycles of amplification? Using this protocol, your primers so far measured, so far apart, how many nanometers along the genetic strand, blah, blah, blah. But they don't tell you how long to bake the cake for. That's just up to you. You bake the cake for as long as you want false positives. If you want a lot of false positives, bake the cake to cycle 45. If you don't want any positives, bake the cake to cycle 17. The only legitimate use of this device to find anything, and he repeats it several times, and it is a critique leveled against it by the Corman-Drosten Retraction Committee. We've had three members of that committee on the program, Kevin Corbett, Kevin McKiernan, and Bobby Rahish Malhotra. And I checked in with Kevin Corbett just yesterday and said, please confirm for me. And he said, absolutely no cycle threshold given in the Corman-Drosten assay. Now, New York is leaving the cycle threshold at 45. He's sort of right there, but it's not in the protocol, and it's a slightly different protocol. Still made from the same bullshit in silico virus and using MN908947 and still using completely cooked up metagenomic transcriptions of nothing, kidney cells and cancer cells and cow pus and all this stuff. So we get to the conclusion. The stunning climax. They needed cases. Well, he's saying that's why they ran it at cycle 45. They needed cases. They needed cases to sell drugs, not to do a lockdown. There's a lot of different moving parts as to the motive. As a fraud lawyer, okay, it's fair enough to say that there's a profit motive in this injection that's going to come out. There's a lot else going on, and he knows it. But my question is, the ultimate operative question is, okay, they use this bullshit test that doesn't test for anything, even when you think it can, because it doesn't diagnose infection, because coronaviruses have been around since the last ice age, and they're running it at cycle 45, and it's not really finding anything, and they did this because they need cases. Okay, drum roll please. Well, then, when is there a real case of COVID? On what day? On what day and what hour do they say, ah, behold, this is not a bullshit in silico cycle threshold 45 mimic clinical specimen metagenomic transcription synthetic nucleotide technology hunk of computer code, but an actual infected person, which is what we're supposed to all be so worried about. Again, this guy is a fraud lawyer. Some fraud lawyers have taught me so much. Rexford Carr, David McRae, Paul Merrill, Roberta Straub, explaining how fraud works. And when fraud lawyers know how fraud works, they know it because the party committing the fraud, in almost all cases, has made an admission against interest in the discovery and the deposition process. They cough up documents saying we're full of shit. Well, Christine Massey has now produced 182 documents. There's more. They're coming. I get the email every couple of days how many new countries, institutions, and so forth, and governments admit they don't have any of this stuff. There's your documents in discovery. We know what they know and what they don't know. And we know, I know, everyone knows that Reiner Fulmich sat there squirming around in his chair like he had hemorrhoids while Andrew Kaufman and Steve Lanka dismantled very efficiently using actual scientific facts. That's what this is supposed to be about. And they took the whole notion of SARS-CoV-2 apart, and he sat there. I watched it. It's on video. He knows there's a problem, but he's not letting on that he knows there's a problem. And this is the position essentially of what I would say is 90% of the so-called COVID truth movement. 90% of them. The list is so long, it's ridiculous. Will Houston, my brother, investigative reporter, has been tracking this issue, and he has made a list for it. Let's see how fast I can find it. H-U-S-T-O-N. And I will read you the list. It's laughable. And these people are all taking, taking this position that, well, the test is invalid and the measures are wrong and the whole thing is overblown and the cycle threshold is too high, but P.S., there's a virus. Well, how do you know there's a virus if the test is all screwed up and the only way to possibly find viral nucleotides is using the test that can't find them? Hold on, I'm going to put you on pause, but you won't be able to tell that. And I'm going to find this list that Will has made. Okay, here you go. This is depressing. Oh my God. This list just gets longer. Paul Alexander, you might not have heard of some of these people. I haven't. I've heard a lot of them. Brian Artis, Alex Berenson, Richard Bartlett, Sucrade Bakhtli, okay, Del Bigtree, Peter Bregan, he's the lab release guy, Brian Bertle, Zach Bush, Dolores Cahill, John Campbell, Ryan Cole, Vernon Coleman, Claire Craig, Ryan Christian, Ivor Cummins, Jimmy Dore, Pete Doshi, Erin Elizabeth Finn, she's part of Mercola's organization, Richard Fleming, Reiner Fulmich, Simone Gold, I believe she's on CHDTV, Sunetra Gupta, Jeremy R. Hammond, a special kind of fool, Roger Hodgkinson, Charles Hoffe, Stella Emanuel, these are the luminaries of the COVID truth movement, Jeffrey Jackson, Dr. Scott Jensen, I love him, he's still pushing the virus, Robert Kennedy Jr., Aaron Kiriati, Steve Kirsch, big millionaire guy pushing the virus theory. These people are all against the lockdowns. They're all against these illegal, unlawful measures. They'll all tell you the test is bullshit, blah, blah, blah. But they push the virus theory. They can't bring themselves to admit that there's even a question. This is the astounding thing. It is the true gaslighting. It is what does not... It is the thing that makes them indistinguishable from the editorial policy of the New York Times. Let's keep going. Carrie Midday, she's brilliant on transhumanism. Marty Makary, Ashim Malhotra. Is that Bobby Rahish Malhotra? How many Malhotras are there? Bobby really sees on the line. He calls it the phantom virus. Chris Martinson, David Martin. He's the guy with all the patents. Well, they damn well better be viruses if he's going to show you patents for them. Lee Merritt, Peter McCullough. He's famous. Kevin McKiernan. He's been on the program. He was the author of the retraction paper. He believes in the virus because he runs a PCR lab. He can't say it's not there. Joseph Mercola. Dr. Joe Mercola, the guy who sells you the world's most awesome vitamins. I used to think he was fabulous. Judy Mikovits. Luc Montagnier, alleged co-discoverer of HIV. Meryl Nass. Christiane Northrup. Gary Null. Larry Pilevsky. Christiana Parks. Jordan Peterson. Julie Paness. Pam Popper, Joe Rogan, she's like a naturopath. Joe Rogan, pay $200 million to do what I do. Jessica Rose, Stephanie Seneff, she's been on the show a few times. Ben Tapper gets guilt by association. Sherry Tenpenny, please. Mark Trozzi, Richard Orso, Geet Vandenbosch, he's famous. Andrew Wakefield. The guy who got his whole career blown out for writing one paper, co-writing one paper on the MMR, he's the poster child for that. People caring about vaccine danger are full of shit when he's not. He knows the problems, but he's still pushing the virus. Whitney Webb? Come on. Whitney Webb, she's like super nerdy, really beautiful, really brilliant girl who's just like, I think she's scrumptious, her mind especially, and she's pushing the virus theory. She's the one doing all the doom and gloom, economic analysis. She was almost on the show. Brett Weinstein, Naomi fucking Wolf, Tom Woods, Michael Yaden, the former medical officer for Pfizer, and Vladimir Zelenko. And people who say the virus issue doesn't matter, my friends, Celia Farber and Mark Crispin Miller. What the fuck? All right, so anyway, I mean, I could just keep ranting about this. For old time's sake, I'm going to skip playing RFK for old time's sake. Let's replay in the interest of, you know, not going on the whole night, just part of it. Let's replay Gates. Gates was the cold opener. This is recent. This is in the last couple of weeks or days. I don't have a date on it, but it was given to me by Claudia, who helps Planet Waves keep the books and keep the office in order. Thank you, Claudia. Here's Gates. Fortunately, this is shorter, but he tells just as many lies. Let's go.
It wasn't until early February when I was in a meeting that experts at the foundation said, there's no way, you know, this... There's been too much travel without diagnosis for us to contain this. And then at that point, we didn't really understand the fatality rate. You know, we didn't understand that it's a fairly low fatality rate and that it's a disease mainly of the elderly, kind of like flu is, although a bit different than that. So that was a pretty scary period,
right,
where the world didn't go on alert, including the United States, nearly as fast as it needed to.
Okay. How many times is it possible to contradict yourself in 40 seconds? Bill Gates just won the world record. So let's get this right. They have a meeting in early February where the experts at the Gates Foundation, it's apparently they have experts there. That's what you do with the Gates Foundation. You have experts. They have a meeting with the experts, and the experts say, nope, sorry, no way we can contain this. Checkable fact. Second, they didn't know that it wasn't really so deadly. Assuming a virus paradigm, put on your propeller hat. They didn't know it was not so bad. It was very scary because they were told they hadn't contained it. They can't possibly contain it. But at that same time, they didn't know that it was just as bad as the flu, a little different. What the fuck does that mean? And that it was a disease of the elderly. What am I going to say next? Why are we injecting, assuming there's a vaccine, assuming there's a virus, now that we know it's a disease of the elderly, comes right from the mouth of Bill Gates and every data set ever produced, all say the same thing. Why are we injecting babies? Why are we injecting children? Why are we injecting teenagers? Why are we injecting adults who are keeling over on live television, on the soccer field, at track events, at every place? So we, the world, have this little problem of not being able to respond to what we have learned. And now Gates is saying, well, we learned at this meeting that it was out of control. Oh my God, what are we going to do? But let's talk about what was known in early February. How do I know what was known in early February? Well, I've spent 2 years making up a chronology. I can tell you exactly what was known in early February. Early February would include late January 2020. First of all, this is when the papers first start to come in saying that there is a virus at all. The first death reported by China, as of January 11, in the entire world and all of China, which is a lot of the entire world, they have one dead body, they claim, is from this, a 61-year-old man who was already sick with chronic liver disease and tumors, but they say he died of COVID. Okay? Liver disease and abdominal tumors? What the hell is that? That sounds like cancer. So he's got what? Cirrhosis, hepatitis, what? And cancer? But they say he died of COVID? So they've got one person who doesn't count. And they've got their first viruses being filed publicly right around the 11th. Okay. Let's see. World Health Organization publishes protocols for a test on January 17th. They've only got a total at this point. They've got maybe 100 people they're claiming in the entire world, which means all of China because it hasn't gotten out, because the test hasn't quite been exported yet. The minute they export the test, they find them everywhere. They're claiming to have 100 cases in the entire world and all of China. So this is in mid to late January. So what are they talking about at this meeting in early February? Let's keep going here. CDC issues narrow guidance on paper who qualified for a test. They weren't even using the test. This is late January, 28th, 27th. Okay. February 1st, there's a laboratory guidance issued by the Pan American Health Organization. Okay, February 2nd, early February. That's when Gates said the foundation had the meeting. Early February. One person has died outside of China. One. What makes them think they're going to have a problem? Why are they even worried? Why are they even having this conversation? How does it even get to be a thing when it's just completely indistinguishable from anything going on in the background? He's completely full of shit. Then he says, oh, P.S., by the way, we didn't know it was only the flu. Well, how do they know anything was anything? How do they know to even think anything was even there to think about in the first place? I learned the word tautology doing all of this. It's an awesome word. It basically, the definition of tautology is, or an example is the reasoning process. It is because it is because it is because it is because it is. That's the logic of the PCR, and that's the logic of Bill Gates. It is because it is, but we had no test. We had no way to know anything was even spreading in the first place, but it was very scary because we didn't know how bad it was going to be. Eh? Meh? It? Okay, what's going on? By February 16th, the Daily Mail is talking about lab release. February 16th, the Daily Mail, tabloid in England, for which I've written many horoscopes, is talking about lab release. Like what? What came out of a lab? What do they even have? This is the hilarious thing about this chronology, is it's just like, it's basically a bunch of people emailing each other and emailing phony computer sequences around. All right. There. I said it. Couple of things. Next segment, Carol Van Strum. I believe her parrot, Pindar, used to call her Harold Van Strum. The author of the book, A Bitter Fog, which in her household they would jokingly call A Bitter Frog. And if you choose to, you can listen to what I think is an extraordinary and moving interview with Carol Van Strum. That goes on for about an hour and a half. And then following that, song break, and then into Tantra Studio, Masturbation Month, part 2 of 4. All right, so as for Mr. Music, this is another one of my favorite luscious gems from Passengers, Always, Forever, Now.